Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Marigold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings. I am here alone today. I'm recording this at around 7 p.m. on Monday evening, before Monday Night Raw. So if something happens on Raw, you don't hear me talk about it, it's because I'm recording this before it happens. I'm here to talk about Brock Lesnar returning to WWE and kind of the conclusion to SummerSlam last night, and what that really means for wrestling and wrestling fandom and things like that. And I spent pretty much all day today and a portion of late last night thinking about what do I have to say about what this means? What do I want to write something? Do I want to record a podcast? And I honestly struggled with it for a large portion of the day. I've read and listened to several different people whose opinions I value talk about it. I thought Trevor Dame wrote a nice write-up on it on his Substack, which you can find on Trevor's social media platforms. And I figured I would just kind of recap. I have a few kind of basic thoughts written down about this. I don't know how long this episode will be, but hopefully people find this interesting. So Brock comes back, comes out at the end of SummerSlam, and his music hits and everyone goes crazy. And I'm not surprised that WWE brought him back for a number of reasons. The first of which is, I believe last year, someone in a post-show press conference asked Paul Levesque, you know, what was going on with Brock Lesnar. And Paul basically said, oh, you know, he's off doing Brock stuff, which I don't know what that means. Is Brock stuff mean that he's, you know, engaging in sex trafficking? Is he showing his dick to women unannounced? Those could be Brock things. But I guess Triple H was implying that he was, I don't know, chopping trees in Saskatchewan or wherever he lives. Anyway, when he said that, I figured, okay, they're going to bring Lesnar back. You know, he's obviously been put on ice because he's named in this human trafficking suit as a witness. And really, and David Bixapan has pointed this out many times, Brock Lesnar is the star witness of whether or not Vince McMahon was trafficking Janelle Grant. Because if you read the lawsuit, the allegation is that Vince was in negotiations for contract renewal with Brock Lesnar, and Brock was weighing his other career options outside of WWE, and kind of as a ploy in Vince's mind to he was offering, oh, you could have sex with this woman that I also have sex with, which of course is human trafficking. It also suggests, and we'll get to these people later, but people keep saying, oh, you know, what did Brock Lesnar do wrong? He didn't commit a crime. What did he do? You can't name it anything. And the answer is, if the allegations in the lawsuit are true, and there's a lot of text messages that have come attached to the lawsuit that show Vince's texts and texts involving Brock Lesnar would seem to suggest that it is true. Brock Lesnar was involved in soliciting sex from somebody that was being sex trafficked, which is a crime. Now, if Brock Lesnar were to be charged with it, I'm sure the argument would be, I didn't know this person was being sex trafficked. I thought it was just Vince McMahon's girlfriend and she was down to play. But the fact that the matter is, there is a real serious allegation aimed at Brock Lesnar here. So this idea that Brock Lesnar is just someone who Vince texted, a nude photo of or something, and Brock replied like normally, that's not true. That's not what the evidence that we have available to us seems to suggest. So when people are like, oh, I'm not sure this guy is on the up and up. I don't know if this guy should be back in WWE right now, especially as that lawsuit is ongoing. That's the main reason why. But I figured Brock would come back. And I'm not surprised that he's back before the lawsuit was settled. Obviously, it seemed like they were waiting for something to happen with the lawsuit being settled. But clearly, that's not the case. And Brock comes back and he gets a big reaction. And the reason I figured Brock was going to come back eventually was because Brock Lesnar has a lot of value to WWE as a proven money-drawing star that WWE fans see as a big deal. And that was evidenced by the fact that when he came out, he got a gigantic pop from the 50,000 or so people that were in attendance. And the big takeaway from SummerSlam, after 2 nights of SummerSlam, and John Cena turning face again, and CM Punk winning the world title, and Seth Rollins cashing in on him, all of that, what's the takeaway? Brock Lesnar's back. Now, some of that is because the controversy that surrounds Brock Lesnar's return to WWE, but it goes to show, I think, of how big of a star people see at Brock Lesnar as that his return to WWE after a long layoff is seen as the paramount event that's going on in the company right now. John Cena turning babyface or Seth Rollins cashing in on CM Punk, that stuff pales in comparison to just Brock Lesnar coming back and presumably going to wrestle, I think, Cody Rhodes and then probably John Cena. Seems to be the direction that they're suggesting. But Brock Lesnar's a big star, and when you're a big star, the company is going to make concessions to you, right? We've seen this with UFC. TKO, the other company, major company that TKO operates, is that like UFC is happy to look the other way when people like Conor McGregor and Jon Jones get wrapped up in legal issues, right? Or have been accused of, frankly, pretty similar stuff. To some of the stuff Brock Lesnar has been accused of participating in, and certainly the stuff that Vince McMahon has been accused of participating in, right? UFC has had no problem promoting those guys, putting those guys in the main events because those guys drew money for UFC, and Brock Lesnar is in the same boat. So, and I figured, you can go back, and I don't know if I wrote this or said it, but I feel like I've been pretty consistent on this thought where I think I said this on WrestleNomics. There's going to come a time where, certainly when the lawsuit first comes out, and all this kind of wild stuff happening, WWE was in a really good spot from a business perspective. They were in a boom period, and that has kind of continued for the most part since the lawsuit first started. The lawsuit hasn't really had a big effect on that, but I figured when business starts to cool off, when they need it feels like an extra jolt. They will look and say, what can we do to give us a little bit more juice? And one of the obvious options is, let's bring Brock Lesnar back. And so over the last few months, we've seen disappointing ratings on both Raw and SmackDown based on the data we get from Netflix. Some slight cooling in terms of attendance, still doing really strong. The company's still in great, is doing very, is still very popular and doing very well. But we saw some signs that maybe they're cooling off, and obviously this John Cena retirement tour isn't going to last forever. It's going to end at the end of the year. So what is something they can do? Let's bring Brock Lesnar back. And lo and behold, he comes down to the ring at the end of SummerSlam and shoots a major angle. So again, I'm not surprised they brought him back. And I'm not surprised that the WWE audience, at least live, was overjoyed that he was back and was super excited to see him back. Now, in the moment, No, because do I believe that there were people in the audience that are like, oh my God, I can't believe this guy's back. This is so wrong. Absolutely. But you also have to understand what the WWE fan is now. And when a WWE fan goes to a major show like a SummerSlam, what do they expect to see? They expect to see a big moment. That's all they care about. They don't really care about the matches. They don't really care about the storylines. They just care about seeing what they would designate as a moment, like a title change. Or, as we saw on the previous night, Seth Rollins cashing in and stealing the title from CM Punk, right? They were there to witness what we would generally just call a moment. And Brock Lesnar showing up was indeed a moment. It's really fascinating to see the company kind of. And not the company as much as the fan base just switch into this mode where, like, historically, wrestling was really all about, like, match results. And even during periods like the Hulkamania era or the Attitude era or these kind of periods of wrestling where the creative kind of transcended what was the accepted norm, it was still largely about seeing like a big match playoff and whoever wins that match going out on top like a champion or something like that, right? It's Steve Austin beating Shawn Michaels and Mike Tyson getting in the ring at WrestleMania 14, and Steve Austin wins the world title and he walks away with it, and that's kind of the big moment. Or Hulk Hogan beat Andre the Giant, right? He gave him a slam, he dropped the leg, and he beat him, and he retained his title at WrestleMania 3. Like, these are their moments, of course, but they're also like tied directly to a match. And that's just not the case anymore with WWE in terms of like what their big shows are built around. They're just kind of built around what kind of thing can we do like post-match that will get people excited? Or maybe someone runs in during a match, right? If people remember last year, the main event of SummerSlam was Solo Sikoa versus Cody Rhodes. And it was a really flat storyline. People didn't really care at all about Solo Sikoa. He was a total flop as that role. The match was bad, but the entire show, literally building up to the show, was just about, well, Roman Reigns is probably going to make a surprise appearance, and a surprise in name only, right? Because he wasn't announced, but everyone kind of knew, oh, Roman Reigns is going to come back, and he's going to, presumably confront Solo Sikoa. And that was what SummerSlam was built around last year, and that's what happened, right? Roman Reigns came out and made his return, and people—that's what people remembered from SummerSlam. They don't remember the boring Solo Sikoa Cody Rhodes match. They remember Roman's music hits and everyone going crazy, and that was the moment that was SummerSlam was built around. And we saw both with Night One and Night Two, SummerSlam was built around creating this moment that kind of has nothing to do with the match, right? CM Punk wins this title against Walter in this match that I know some people really liked it. I didn't really care for it, but the crowd was not invested at all in the match, really. Maybe, they popped for the title change because, again, that's to them a moment, but the match itself was not that exciting to the live audience. What they were excited about was Seth Rollins's Burn It Down music to hit, and he comes down and he, throws his crutches aside and does the whole worked injury gimmick, and he comes out, cashes in, and wins the title, and that's what those fans live for, right? They don't give a shit about CM Punk and Walter and the kind of match that they had, right? They're here for the cash in and the moment of seeing Seth Rollins, screw over CM Punk and win the title. And they're there for the moment of seeing Brock Lesnar come out and give an F5 to Cody Rhodes. That's what they're really there for. And that was the per if you're WWE, if you're Paul Levesque or whoever came up with this creative idea, that's the perfect utilization for a Brock Lesnar, because it was a moment. It was something that those fans will remember. It was unexpected. They did a very good job keeping that under wraps. No one really expected that Brock Lesnar was going to come out. People maybe thought The Rock was going to be involved because of his prior involvement. Again, like, people thought The Rock was going to be there, right? There wasn't really hints that The Rock was going to be at SummerSlam, but WWE fans have been conditioned to believe, well, they can't just have a normal wrestling match. Someone's going to have to run out and shoot an angle or come out afterwards. And The Rock is like the big star, is the obvious person that you'd kind of write into that spot, given his history with both Cody Rhodes and John Cena. Alas, it ended up being Brock Lesnar. But people expected to see something because that's what the WWE system has created, and that expectation has created that expectation. So Brock is the perfect person to slide into that, and Brock comes out, and then we kind of get so the WWE fan base reaction, at least live and in the building, was It wasn't people going, "Oh my God, Brock Lesnar is here," and like, 50,000 people collectively tugging their collar and wondering what was going on. No, they lost their shit. They went crazy. They were excited to see Brock. They were probably chanting his name. I don't know. But it was, all about Brock Lesnar's back, and we're excited and shocked and amazed and all of these things in a good way for Brock Lesnar. There was no kind of obvious, "Oh man, this person's problematic." Outside of the live event, outside of the people that were actually in the building that night, there's been a little bit more, I think, discussion amongst like regular WWE fans. Obviously, not the people like me and the people that are kind of in my circle, where we're obviously like, "Oh my God, this is horrible, another terrible thing that WWE has done." But even amongst the people that view WWE in a much more favorable light, there I have seen personally some pushback about, "Man, I don't know. This is wrong." Now I think those people, a lot of those people will get over it. They'll see an angle on Raw and they'll be like, "All right, I guess I can overlook this. I love WWE." And that's what WWE is certainly counting on, right? They might say, "Oh, there's going to be some noise on social media," but at the end of the day, all those fans that say they're going to stop watching aren't going to start watching. They're still going to be into it, and they'll be excited for Brock Lesnar because we have them. We can control how they feel, and they are never going to, leave us because we're family, we're their childhood, we're nostalgia, we're what they, engage in on social media. We are, WWE is to a lot of people this just huge cultural aspect of their entire personalities. And those people are not going to stop watching, even if that you give them ample reason to stop watching, whether the product is bad or whether you're featuring sexual predators. That they will watch forever. And that's what WWE is counting on. And it's been a sound business strategy pretty much for the last 40 years. And that's kind of based around like what the audience reaction is to Brock. I don't think he's going to get booed at buildings. I don't think he's going to get rude chants, levied at him. I don't think any of that's going to happen. What does the company think? It was interesting that obviously that Paul Levesque didn't hold any press conferences after SummerSlam over night one or night two. The general takeaway from that was because of his involvement with Donald Trump, which is a video package they aired not once but twice over the weekend, once on SmackDown, I believe, and once during SummerSlam, that Levesque didn't want to handle any political questions, which if I was WWE's PR team, I would obviously want to cancel those pressers because Paul Levesque, despite the fact that he's rarely asked difficult questions, on the few occurrences where he's actually had difficult question, he usually vomits all over himself. Earlier that week, he had been asked about Vince McMahon, and he summarized Vince McMahon and the sex trafficking lawsuit as, "Hey, everyone makes mistakes, and people have complicated relationships," which is one way to describe it. Isn't how I would describe it. But he's not the most media savvy guy, and we've seen that time and time again. So of course, he wasn't gonna have a press conference. I assumed that that was the reason the press conferences were canceled. But obviously, I think on top of that, seeing Brock Lesnar come out, and obviously, they have a pretty controlled atmosphere in those press conferences. But even under a controlled atmosphere, and even if you have the slowest of belt mutants, asking questions, if you do an angle like Brock Lesnar coming out at the end of SummerSlam as a huge surprise, those people are probably going to ask about Brock Lesnar. They might ask, "Oh, how come Brock Lesnar came back? Was he when he's named in that sex trafficking lawsuit, and your company is currently being sued for sex trafficking?" I don't think they would ask that question, but they would ask something about Brock Lesnar, and that's just something you don't want to have Paul Levesque answer. So pressers are gone, and I know a lot of people are calling Paul Levesque a coward, for doing that. I mean, he obviously is. I mean, when has Paul Levesque not been a coward with this kind of stuff? He's the like I said, the few times he's been asked about it, he's been confrontational. He buried all the dirt sheets when in France when Lucas Chappuyat asked one question about the lawsuit. He pretended he hadn't read the lawsuit when he was asked about the lawsuit back at the Royal Rumble 2 years ago, right after the lawsuit came out. So he's obviously not very good at this. answering these kind of questions. And everyone's saying, oh, he's really soft and he can't handle any of these questions. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how he is. I don't know what people expect these days. I mean, it is kind of funny that he's so afraid. They're so afraid of that, that even in these very controlled environments where no credible people are left really there asking any questions, and it's basically all just fans and people with maybe people with like blogs or YouTube videos, or some of the times it's just like outright WWE employees or people associated closely with WWE, like Ariel Helwani or Sam Roberts. But they're like these people that are pseudo WWE employees that are back there, and that's basically. But even that is a little too much for Paul Levesque. One of those people might mention Brock Lesnar and he might not say the right thing. So it was that's more funny to me than anything. But one of the things that I was thinking about, and people have said this in regards to what does this mean for the lawsuit, right? Because clearly Brock was not being kept on television because he's named as a witness in the lawsuit. What does that say? What is it from a legal perspective? Did something change that makes TKO lawyers feel like, oh, it's okay now for Brock Lesnar to be on our show? Because I'm sure there were, pitches over the last year and a half or whatever, however long it's been. There have been those pitches for Brock's return. What are we going to do with Brock? Is this a storyline? This is something you might want to do. I'm sure there's been ideas, but clearly there's been something standing in the way of him returning to television, and that thing has probably been the lawsuit. So did something change? And Janelle Grant's spokespeople put out a statement earlier today, basically saying, this just, we're upset that their WWE is once again trying to sweep these allegations under the rug, and we look forward to, uncovering more and more evidence that supports, Janelle Grant's allegations. And if you're, I don't, I again, obviously, I don't know anything really about the legal system. Been in plenty of courtrooms and covered court cases before, but I'm obviously not a lawyer. I've never been to law school or anything like that. One thought I just had was that, like if you're Janelle Grant's lawyers, you would say, look, this company doesn't protect women. It doesn't take women's allegations seriously. Look, Brock Lesnar is a witness to this. Brock Lesnar has allegations against him in the past. And what do? They brought him back. And now he's working and he's backstage in the locker room with all of the men and women in WWE. And that just shows that this company is not serious about these allegations, not serious about protecting women. And that's a credible argument from a very credible argument from Janelle Grant's team's perspective. Obviously this is a move that shows that they don't really care about the safety of women, and they certainly don't care about Janelle Grant's allegations and what they might mean, because they brought back Brock Lesnar. And then so from a legal perspective, it just makes me show that I think like TKO strategy is going to be like complete denial about everything, to say that everything between Janelle Grant and Vince McMahon was consensual, just like Vince McMahon has said, or Vince McMahon's attorneys have said. And that Brock Lesnar was just involved in a consensual sex arrangement, and there's nothing more to that, right? Because they're obviously no longer afraid of putting Brock Lesnar on TV for legal purposes, or how it will make their legal case look if this lawsuit continues to go down towards a path of where we're actually in the courtroom arguing things like that. So I think it shows that WWE is committed, WWE's defense during the lawsuit is committed to totally downplaying any type of negative relationship that Janelle Grant had with Vince McMahon, and by its nature, WWE or other WWE employees. Now, that probably sounds like the strategy they would have had the entire time, right? But for whatever reason, it wasn't. Or at least for whatever reason, there was enough fear about Brock Lesnar's role in the lawsuit to keep him off of television. And now there isn't. So it's something worth monitoring, and such. I've heard people say that this is so they brought Brock back, and they're paving the way for Vince McMahon to come back into the company. And I have a hard time connecting those dots, because obviously, right, if we brought back Brock Lesnar, who's involved in the lawsuit, he's like, a minor player in the lawsuit in the grand scheme of things. We can bring back Vince McMahon, who's the key player in the lawsuit, eventually. If the fans accept Brock Lesnar, well, they'll accept Vince McMahon. And if Brock Lesnar doesn't hurt us, then certainly Vince McMahon won't hurt us, right? And I think that there's a real key difference between Brock Lesnar and Vince McMahon beyond just their roles in the lawsuit, which are obviously very different. And, the allegations against Vince McMahon are far more severe than the allegations against Brock Lesnar. But Brock provides value to WWE as a drawing act that the company can present and make money off of. Just like I said at the start of this episode, fans still view him as a big star. He's going to draw money. He is a very useful person to have on the WWE roster. And so even if he has some problems that make him less desirable, that's going to be pretty easily overlooked because of the value that he brings in a business that's about star power and drawing fans and drawing attention to your product. Brock Lesnar is a huge asset. So he is someone that has, I think, a very easy path to returning to WWE, as we have seen this past weekend. That's exactly what happened. The difference with Vince is that I don't think Vince McMahon really has any value to WWE. The WWE product and po the popularity of the product is significantly up since Vince McMahon was gone. I would imagine that the atmosphere backstage is better without Vince McMahon. I imagine that the people that are the key decision makers in WWE, like Nick Khan, and Ari Emanuel, can identify. Look, Vince is an important figure in the history of WWE, but at the end of the day, he was an 80-year-old man that was making everyone's job a lot more complicated and was erratic. And once we got rid of him, we have a much more stable, concise, controlled system of creative and key decision making. So bringing back Vince, even if it's in like a subdued ambassador-like role, it just doesn't hold that much value to WWE. It could if you wanted to, like, just there's this idea that like they'll want to bring him back just because they can, right? Just because they can show that we're untouchable and that we can bring back anybody and there's nothing you guys can do about it, and it doesn't matter what allegations people have against them, we'll bring them back just because we can. I mean, maybe, but it just seems so unnecessary because not only does Vince have all these negative allegations and very serious crimes that he's been accused of committing, and who knows how the lawsuit will eventually shake out. But fans outside of the personal, Vince McMahon's personal life have a complicated relationship with seeing Vince McMahon. The fans were excited that Vince McMahon is out of power and they love Paul Levesque's creative. That's the general consensus amongst WWE fans. And the consensus was Vince McMahon had lost his fastball, that he didn't make good creative decisions, that he didn't listen to the fans, that he had disdain for fans' opinions, all things that have kind of been rebuilt in this Paul Levesque era. Why bring this guy back? Why bring him into the mix? Why associate him with your current 2025 product? Why do that? There's not a lot of value there. Now, you could, you don't have to whitewash him from history anymore. And maybe you can, mention him on air and things like that again, but you don't have to bring him back. Certainly not bring him back in any type of, official capacity or consistent capacity. It wouldn't surprise me if Vince McMahon came back, because nothing would surprise me with this company. But I think the circumstances between Brock Lesnar coming back and Vince McMahon coming back are very different. Lastly, the reaction from media members and pundits regarding Brock Lesnar's return. What's the media's job? It's to promote transparency, it's to inform the public, and it is to hold entities accountable. WWE has a lot of questions to be held accountable for. Bringing Brock Lesnar when the lawsuit is still ongoing. How are you keeping women safe backstage? If, Brock Lesnar was the allegations in the lawsuit are that Janelle Grant was used as a contract negotiation ploy to and was offered up as like this human sex, basically prostituted out to Brock Lesnar in hopes that Brock Lesnar would resign with the company. So like a question I would have would be like, they obviously wouldn't respond kindly to this, but if I was in, if Triple H did have a presser and I was there, which is now a total fantasy, I would ask, did Brock Lesnar, did was Brock Lesnar offered any women that work for WWE to have sex with in order to get him to return? Because the evidence from the lawsuit would suggest that that's something the company does. Now, obviously, Paul Levesque's head would explode if that question was asked to him in a press conference. And that's one of the reasons he probably didn't have the presser. And certainly one of the reasons they weeded out anyone that would ask a real question out of those pressers over time. But it's an honest question that deserves to be asked. Now, I don't think that Brock Lesnar was offered a woman to have sex with in order for him to come back for SummerSlam. I do not believe that is the case. But based on the evidence from the lawsuit, that would be a credible question to ask at a presser. And it is the media's job to ask these questions and to try to get answers to these questions. And unfortunately, most people that work in wrestling media don't understand that. And that's a shame. This is a real issue that needs professionalism to be addressed, and that's just not going to happen with the wrestling media the way it is. I mean, the most I think we can ask of people, the most I've seen from people is key media members just being like, yeah, it's really bad that Brock Lesnar is back, which is true. That it's bad that and it's a bad look for WWE, even though, like I said, they agree that it's not really going to matter. But I would challenge people to go a little bit further than that and say, ask these questions like, how are you going to keep, like, what kind of commitment is there to make sure when you're having somebody like Brock Lesnar backstage that everyone feels comfortable? Because if I was a woman in the locker room, hell, if I was a man in the locker room and I saw Brock Lesnar, like, that person makes me uncomfortable based on what allegations have been out there, not just with the Janelle Grant lawsuit, but other things. Look up the Terry Runnels story from 2004, where she says that Brock Lesnar exposed himself to her, in kind of just like a typical, WWE boys will be boys kind of fashion, but it's something that I think is certainly worth revisiting in light of the lawsuit. But those are questions that the media should be asking of WWE. And if they're not, they're not doing their job. And I think it's easy to just be like, oh, yeah, it's really controversial that they brought him back. Oh, well, on to the next thing. Let's talk about this John Cena's Cody Rhodes match. There's not a lot of teeth anymore in WWE. It's one of the my issues with Dave is that Dave, you go back and read the old Observers, and Dave is really, really on top of things in terms of pointing out stuff that's wrong, pointing out stuff that's incorrect, and taking these companies to task for those mistakes, and doing a really good job, I think, of asking questions and holding companies accountable. Go back and read, his coverage of the Monday Night Wars and WCW and WWF and all these companies that have done scummy things over time, and there's no shortage of wrestling companies that have done scummy things over the years. And Dave really takes them to task, and I just don't think he does that anymore. I don't think he has his teeth the way he used to. He has teeth on Twitter when he's arguing with eggs, who are t yelling at him about, God knows what, not star ratings and Mabel being the third man or whatever. But he doesn't have that same kind of analysis anymore in the Observer, which is a shame because he's one of the few people that has, the credibility and certainly the background and the memory and historical knowledge to really take them to task. And I just don't think he does that in nearly the same way as he used to. And it's like Brandon Thurston and Pollock are really good at that. But that's pretty much it. And I think today a lot of the arguments have been defined by certain people like my former boss, Raj Giri. Or Jimmy Van at Fightful. Or these other people who have jumped on and said, what, oh, Brock didn't do anything wrong. That's just the fact he hasn't been charged with a crime, so he didn't do anything wrong. And that's that. Checkmate, losers. And that's been interesting to me, seeing that kind of type of the media react. I don't think anyone that serious that we would take seriously, the handful of real newsbreakers in WWE, in wrestling media, haven't really taken that tact. But it's been a tact that a lot of personalities and pundits in the wrestling sphere have taken, which is that, Brock Lesnar, he's a witness, but he's not, being charged with anything, so there's no reason why he can't be on the show. And I think that's kind of telling because it speaks to, I think, the really deep personal relationship that a lot of people have with WWE as lifelong fans, where they will pretty much defend anything that the company does, especially if they feel like it is being attacked by people who they view as their enemies, right? So if somebody is, they see somebody who they think is a big AEW fan or a known WWE hater that's pointing out, well, it's pretty controversial to bring Brock Lesnar back. I mean, that's he's named in that sex trafficking lawsuit. That's pretty bad that they're bringing him back. Those people that have WWE fandom so deeply woven into their personalities, and they see someone who they view as their enemy taking a shot at WWE, they are going to come out and be extremely defensive and say, whoa, Brock Lesnar was never charged with a crime, and if you've got a problem with that, you're just a pussy, which is what Raj Giri basically said. That's because these people have a really unhealthy personal relationship with WWE, and it manifests itself during times like this, when there's real controversy and there's real accountability and asking, there's real questions needing to be asked and real accountability need to be aimed at towards WWE. And these people show you who they are, which is people that have dangerous, uncomfortable personal relationships with WWE and will defend the company in pretty much all occasions. And I would have a, my personal opinions on this are right. Like, I would, like, Brock Lesnar should not be back in the company. It's very, very serious what he's been accused of. And putting him back out there not only is a potential danger to people within the company, but almost, more importantly than that, more significant than that, is a message that shows we don't care what women say. We don't care what our men are accused of. We're just going to keep doing whatever we want to do. And whatever, whatever happens backstage, we don't really care. And that's a really negative message to be sending to all of your fans, especially your female fans, but all, really all of your fans in general. Like, I can't imagine, I don't have any kids, but like being a father and having daughters and like standing hard for, oh, Brock Lesnar didn't do anything wrong. You guys are just pussies. I couldn't imagine being that kind of person. But your mileage may vary on that. But you see these people kind of lash out and they react. And I would, I, you know, so so my opinion on Brock Lesnar's return is that it's a bad idea. It's bad look for the company. It says all the wrong things you want about WWE, and it's gross. It's gross. It's a gross thing to happen. But if someone was just, you know what I said, like what I feel like is the much more honest support that this return would have, which is that, look, I know Brock's a controversial figure. I know that some people are going to be uncomfortable, but as a wrestling fan, I really enjoy his work. I'm excited to see him toss Cody Rhodes around, and I think this is going to be interesting from a storyline perspective. I wouldn't agree with that take necessarily, but I would at least respect that person at least being open about why they are okay with Brock Lesnar coming back. And it's because they enjoy seeing Brock Lesnar on their TV screen and they find him a compelling wrestler. That's at least honest. And then that's at least, the ability to separate the person from the artist, the art from the artist, and things like that. But these people that instead of coming out and say that, and this shows how deep that pathological issue is, instead of coming out and just saying something like that, like, oh, Brock Lesnar, I really like seeing Brock. It was a cool moment seeing him come out on SummerSlam, and I'm excited to see him continue. Instead of that, it was so many people that were just ultra defensive about that Brock Lesnar didn't do anything wrong, WWE didn't do anything wrong, it's the perfect company, and anyone that doesn't agree with that doesn't know what they're talking about, or they're just a biased AEW fan, or they're just a pussy. And there's way too much of that going on, and I think that's really telling because it shows where the loyalty lies. It's not in simple, oh, I'm a fan and I want to see cool stuff happen, which is a very understandable position, if not one that leads to some more deeper questions about their how morality plays into what you consume and things like that. Instead, it's must defend the Fed at all costs, must defend Brock, must defend whatever WWE does because I can't tolerate people attacking this thing that I view basically as an extension of myself. That's the really alarming part. That's the really shocking part. I guess it's not shocking because, right, this is all predictable. I could have said these people were going to defend this move no matter what, and those are the people that did it. But I think what we're seeing as more and more time goes on, especially since the creation of AEW, which just fried a bunch of brains, what we're seeing is we're seeing people have such a strong allegiance to this thing that they associate so closely with themselves that they will defend it at all costs. And so those are my thoughts on Brock. Should have a new intro, or not intro, but a new like bumper for this kind of the show that will appear on some of the other Voices of Wrestling podcast feeds. I'm working on getting a new one up. But we'll be back soon with another guest. This is just something kind of I've been thinking about all day, so I wanted to get it out there and hopefully people are interested in what I had to say. I want to thank all the support, want to thank all the people who will continue to listen, and I'll talk to you again after a while.
Hey kids, Jeff Hawkins from Shake Them Ropes here, and for almost 15 years we have been part of Voices of Wrestling. Myself and Chris Novembrino give a review of that week's news, the lazy river of wrestling criticism of that week's WWE and AEW, and then Vader Club, where we watch something from one of our past, or something we may have missed. Smart, snarky, and sometimes serious, but not always. That's us, and if that's your vibe, we'd love to have you listen to Shake Them Ropes every week on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Marigold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.